You got a real attitude problem, Belmont. You're a slacker. You remind me of your father when he went here. He was a slacker, too.
Can I go now, Mr. Dracula?
Why even bother, Belmont? You don't have a chance. You're too much like your old man. No Belmont ever amounted to anything in the history of Transylvania.
Yeah, well, history's gonna change.
Abra, abra, cadabra. Alakazam.
Is that a Pokemon-based musical?
No, did you ever hit a song? I think it's by Steve Miller Band.
Oh. No, I guess I haven't.
Oh.
Now I feel like a bad classic rock fan. Did you see the new Pokemon Gen announcement?
Yeah, the direct was... It's good. It wasn't what I was expecting, but...
What starter did you side with? There's Grookey, the grass monkey. There's Scorbunny, the fire bunny, and then there's Sobble, the water lizard thing.
I'm definitely going with Sobble.
You're going with Sobble?
Oh my god, he's so adorable.
Oh, I'm Grookey Gang all the way. Grookey Gang, Grookey Gang, Grookey Gang.
He just looks so stupid. Just when he came out of his little fountain.
Hey guys,
everybody needs some water. I don't know. What do you think's the best original three?
The best team of starters?
Yeah.
You know, I did this thing on Twitter recently where, like, I picked what my favorite starters were. I'm going to say I was a big fan. Well, I'll say this. I think my least favorite is Gen 3, Hoenn, Mudkip, Treecle, and Torchic. I do not like those.
Yeah.
Like design wise, what they evolve into wise, not a fan. In terms of consistency, I probably like the Gen 2 and Gen 4 starters. So Gen 2 being Chikorita, Cyndaquil, and Totodile, and then the Gen 4 being Turtwig, Chimchar, and the penguin.
Piplup.
Piplup, yes.
That's my set right there.
They're really cool, and they evolve into really cool, versatile things, and, yeah.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love Bulbasaur, Charmander, and Squirtle.
Yeah.
But my problem with them is I like their first stages and their third stages. I don't like their middle stages at all.
Well, nobody likes teenagers, so, I mean, you know, it's not surprising.
We're all grumpy.
Charmeleon, yeah. Wartortle is too close to Wario. That's why he sucks.
No, he's our boy.
No, he's not my boy. And then Ivysaur, it's like, what's special?
All right, you're practically Bulbasaur.
Yeah.
Just with a bigger plant.
You pop the pimple on your back. Good job.
And with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. As always, I'm Josh, joined by...
the horrifying monster, Tom.
And this week we'll be discussing Castlevania on Nintendo Entertainment System.
Castlevania, the Castlevania.
The Castlevania.
Yes.
So Tom, this was your first time playing Castlevania.
Yeah, you keep doing this to me. You keep making me have to do lots of work because I can't just rely on memory like you.
Well, I played this game.
No, I know.
Leading up to this episode, I beat it 4 times in one day.
And that was just one day. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you do it like 3 more times this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was gathering gameplay footage just in case I ever needed it later down the road.
Uh-huh. Wink, wink. Mm. But,
So what did you think of it, Tom?
Let me say this. This is, a very fun game. I think that it's got simple to learn but difficult to master mechanics, and I love just like I love the world of it. I love the soundtrack. The soundtrack is a real banger. It's good. It's very good. I would definitely put it in like the upper echelon of NES games I've played. I do have some things to say though, not like really negative, but things
you gotta get off your chest. Mm-hmm.
Now, Josh, for you, this is like an all timer, right?
Yeah, this is in the top 5 of best games of all time in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So
you want to reveal those now, or do we want to? Or is that, do we want to make that like a mythical thing that we?
No, that's gonna be out. A mythical thing. Yeah, yeah. We'll get that in a later episode. Mm, mm.
Cool.
So this game was released on May 1st, 1987 for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It was actually released back in September 26th, the previous year, in Japan. So it's like crazy that this came out almost a year later in America.
Shit's older than me.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. You play as the one and only Simon Belmont, who is, you know, nowadays known for Super Smash Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, got his start here on the original Castlevania. But crazy enough, though, this isn't actually the first Castlevania game.
What?
In the timeline, this actually kind of falls right around the middle of the Castlevania storyline.
Mmm. Got a real Kojima on our hands here.
And developed and published by Konami, which is, you know, RIP Sunset Riders.
Mwah.
So, people like to think that the Legend of Zelda timeline is all over the place, and this game happens before this one happens in a different universe, and this goes here and go. Like, Castlevania is probably, like, one of the starts to this timeline debacle thing.
Mm. Yeah, I actually should mention, this is not the first Castlevania game I've played. I played a little bit of Castlevania Lords of Shadow on the Xbox 360. So, where's that? Like, what continuity is that game in?
So the Lord of Shadow series is actually a completely different like grouping. You have the original series and then you have the Lords of Shadow series.
Okay.
Which is Lords of Shadow, Lords of Shadows, Mirrors of Fate, and then Lords of Shadows 2. This actually falls into the original series line, where this is actually the sixth story in the original series timeline.
Okay. It's funny you say this because so I played this via the eShop on my Nintendo Wii U, because I still try to give that boy life anytime I can. Mm-hmm. And because I don't have, like, the manual or anything, it's just funny how, like, if you don't know anything about this game going into it, this is what all I could assume the backstory would be. The plot is about a guy in a leather bikini who decides to rob a castle. Like, if you don't know anything else.
It's like the prequel to Mario Land 2. It's what Wario was actually doing.
Wario hires Simon Belmont to go clear out this castle so that he could take it.
There isn't really much of a story to it. I mean, you get the idea of you're this guy who's going to kill Dracula. But if you just look at it from, you know, without any type of backstory or anything, it's just like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go break into this guy's house, kill him, and then destroy his house. Murder everything that's inside of it.
Simon didn't like the loud music that was coming from down the block.
You crazy kids.
That's it. I tried to do this peacefully.
I'm getting my whip.
Now I'm going to whip you all to death. It's like the plot of Neighbors with more violence and monsters.
Oh, my God.
So Simon Belmont goes to this castle and just starts mowing through it. Do you want to talk it like kind of level by level?
Yeah, let's start with the actual overall story though to the game.
Okay.
So every 100 years, Dracula is supposed to come back and his castle is supposed to be resurrected along with him as well. So the year's 1691, there's actually a curse that's fallen over the land, which has turned the hearts of men black and they yearn for chaos and destruction in the town. So they decide to go ahead, since it's the 100th year of Dracula being gone, ever since Christopher Belmont, who was actually, I believe, the protagonist in the Game Boy games, they try to resurrect Dracula and bring him back to life so they can just take over and destroy the world. The men succeeded in bringing Dracula back and thus putting Simon Belmont on this quest to pick up where Christopher left off and become the newest Belmont. Taking his awesome vampire killer whip and trying to rid the world of evil. Pretty straightforward story.
I mean, yeah, you know. I think that's all effectively communicated.
Yeah.
In the opening cutscene.
Yeah, so.
JK. But that's.
I will say, though, this opening cutscene, and we talked about it when we did Super Meat Boy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just such a great opening scene. For 1987, like, this was just, there was so much hype behind this. Just like the way he's like walking up and he just stands in front of the gates and just looks up at the castle. Like, there's so much just like, you know, you're going to like go kick some ass.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. And like the music too, it's so good.
Yeah. Well, it's that. Dun, 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 and then when you go through the gates, the classic Vampire Killer theme hits. And it's one of my favorite just themes in any video game.
It's very, very good. That little like opening section is great because they just dump you in this courtyard. There's no threats. Like, it's just this perfect little tutorial area. It's like everything, like, so you walk around a bit. There's nothing really around you except like flower pots and stuff. And the funny thing is that the flower pots are all spaced in a way that like as soon as you hit A, you will whip one. And so it's like an instant like teaching thing. It's like, oh, I can hit things and they'll break open. All right. Mm-hmm. And then you get to hit a couple more and you pick up some items and everything. You pick up a heart. You pick up, I believe, an extension for your whip, and then some bags of money and even a bonus point brick. And like then you go through the door. So within like this little like area, you learn how to work Simon, and then you see all the things you can collect, and then they're like, all right, go.
That's it. And then you go right into the castle, and then you got some ghouls you got to whip up. Mm-hmm. You got some weird little cat things that you got to beat up as well.
Ugh, yeah. and then the bats, of course. This is a bat-themed level in a way.
Yeah, until you go down into, like, the sewer-ish area, and then you have, like, our first little callback to classic Universal Monster, which is the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, your boy.
Yeah, I love him. Mm-hmm. I love him. Mm-hmm. Straight from pro wrestling from the NES as well.
Nice. So, yeah. But
it's pretty straightforward level, you know, just kind of getting you the idea. It wasn't overly difficult.
No. Which is funny, because, like, it's challenging but not difficult. But I will say this, like, this is the last kind of simple level in the game. Like, the difficulty curve goes right through. Mm-hmm. After you beat the monster bat boss at the end of this, and then it's like, okay, the training wheels are coming right off. Now we're throwing you into the deep end. Yeah. Other analogy for difficulty increasing, you know.
Right. And throughout the level, you do find other items to kind of give you an idea of what you're going to expect later throughout the level. Mm-hmm. So you have the cross, which actually will just eliminate all the enemies on the screen. Mm-hmm. You have the kind of like pitcher that when you walk into it, you become invincible for a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm. You got the holy water, which leaves a little like flame that remains on the stage for a few seconds.
Yep. And then you get the axe, which the axe comes in handy at the end of this level against the bat. Because one big thing about all the bosses in this game, they are weak to a particular item.
Mm.
And the bat at the end of this level actually is weak to the axes that you would get towards the end of the level. And that's why they give it to you right before the final boss.
It makes sense. It's an airborne enemy, so knock it out of the air.
Yep. So if you look around and, you know, hit some of the blocks and stuff like that, you'll also discover that there's these little blocks in there that have numbers on them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ran into any of those.
Well, that's what I was referring to as the bonus blocks, because they're worth like 1,000. Okay. They're like 1,000 points each, right?
Nope.
No?
Now, in these like hidden blocks, when you break them, there's going to be numbers on them.
Yeah.
And the number actually corresponds to the weapon that you have. So if you pick up a number 2, when you have the axe, you're able to throw 2 axes then.
Oh.
Rather than throwing one, waiting for the animation to end, and then you can throw it again. If you have a number 2, you can throw 2 axes back to back.
Okay.
If you pick up a number 3 after you get the number 2, you can throw 3 axes at the same time, which can actually eliminate the main bosses a little bit faster than normal.
Wow. Okay. I didn't really pay attention to that. So that's really interesting. No, because it makes sense. Like, I know I had a 2 when I had the throwing daggers, and I remember them, like, coming out really fast. So that kind of makes sense now, you know?
Yep.
Cool.
So just little pieces there. And just, that's one thing I didn't pick up onto that until, like, way later down of playing this game. I was like, what are those numbers actually? And then I was just goofing around. I'm like, wait, how did I throw 2 things? I'm like, is that number 2 actually mean I can throw 2 things? But yeah.
Nice. So while we're talking about 2s, we get into level 2, right?
Yeah.
I just gotta say this. This is like a part of the game. I mentioned to you that like the difficulty goes up, and it's really at the section of the game where a couple things for me started getting aggravating. And it's like, it's, you know, it's easy to judge something from an older period of history. I'm not trying to do this, but there's just a couple things I wanted to talk about. And this is something specific that when I realized it, I wish I had talked about this in our Mario 3 episode when I was saying some things I didn't like about classic Mario games. And I want to say this right now. Time limits in classic 2D games have not aged well and, in my opinion, are in fact garbage. Mm-hmm. Like how in Mario and like in this especially, like how there's a I think it's like 400 seconds in this.
Yeah, I believe it's around that time frame.
It's like I get why they did it, because they were trying to emulate, I guess, like the sense of urgency that arcade games had. And so it's like it pushes you to go as fast as you can, to be as precise as you can, as like, you know, a difficulty incentive. But, you know, it really curbs your interest in exploring when you have to race against a clock. And like in certain cases, like in the Medusa levels, like, you know, part two of the game, mm-hmm. I was like walking around trying to like find stuff. And then I got into a situation where basically the checkpoint right before Queen Medusa, I only had 80 seconds, and you have to run through those descending spike things and fight a ghost, climb up the stairs, like jump over the Medusa heads, and then beat Queen Medusa in that time limit. It's very stressful, and I just kind of like I'm sitting there and I'm like, I get why time limits existed then, but like looking back at them, it's like why did we have this? You know, like I think it puts this unnecessary level of stress on it, and that's actually something why I realized I've been replaying Super Mario Bros. 2, i.e. my favorite 2D Mario, on the Switch now. There's no time limits in that one. So, like, I can explore those levels as much as I want, you know?
Yeah, I think the reason that they come into it is because some of these games actually were ported over into arcade cabinets. Castlevania was one, the original Mario Brothers.
Okay.
You know, you look at games like Donkey Kong and stuff like that, they all had time limits on it because they were kind of made to eat your quarters.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are certain things, like we were talking about with Mario 3. If you finished the level at a particular time or something like that, you would get extra hidden areas in the game.
Yes, yes.
If you beat Mario 1, for instance, and it finished with a 6 in the last digit, you got the fireworks at the end. There was always little added bonuses. And I haven't ever found any added bonuses for finishing a level faster or later than whatnot. Mm-hmm. In Castlevania. Now, Castlevania 2, however, there is some differences to that. But that's something we can talk about if we ever decide to talk about Castlevania 2, which is...
I mean, I would be interested in it. But, yeah, just like a thought I had when I was playing it, mm-hmm. and I was just, like, trying to beat Medusa as fast as possible. I'm like, the clock! But one other thing, the Queen of Medusa's, I had a lot of some trouble on this level because there's a section where you have to jump over some platforms... sorry, you have to jump over some pits as Medusa heads are, like, floating diagonally at you. And it's challenging because, you know, if you get hit, like, Simon apparently weighs, like, 20 pounds. If you get hit, he gets thrown. Mm-hmm. And so it's really easy to fall into these pits. But one part that was aggravating me was you come up to the pit area via some steps, and the input detection near the steps is can be very finicky. Like, I was trying to push down to crouch under a Medusa head, and instead Simon was like, oh, you want to walk downstairs? Okay. And he would walk down the stairs, and it would cause him to either get hit by the Medusa head, because you can't jump when you're on stairs, or it would just cause me to walk back downstairs, and then again, you're dragging the time out in the level, and I was like, no, go back up! Right. So there was a couple things there where I was just like a little annoyed by how the level detection worked. But
one of the biggest things that people complain about this game is the, you know, getting knocked back when you're getting hit and stuff. Uh-huh. And it's one of those things I can take it or leave it. Like I said, I played this game so much that like that doesn't really bother me. I can anticipate it now. Like I know, like, OK, well,
sure,
I can get hit here. I'm going to get launched back. There's actually a part in the first level that I've gotten pretty good at doing. When you encounter the first bat, if you jump at him and turn around in midair, you hit the bat and it'll launch you backwards, but it'll jump you over on top of where the bat came from. So you can completely skip the whole underwater part in the first level
by just doing
it certain ways.
That's cool.
So it's like you can use it to your advantage. I know in that part where you're talking about, with the Medusa head coming, you can actually jump up in the air. They can hit you and knock you back, and you can land up on the top platform and just continue through the next room without having to go all the way down to the end with the other, like, skeletons and stuff like that.
Oh, I wish I know that. Yeah.
But there's, I mean, it's one of those, like, it has to be, like, precise jump, precise hit. The exact Medusa head has to come over from how it gets sent through the screen and stuff. But, so, yeah, we continue through, and you said about getting to the end there, and you had the giant Queen Medusa.
Yep. Just... her, it's just like, just keep her immobile. Like, the more you hit her, she's not going to move. She's not going to drop snakes. So just, you know, mash that A button.
Or you can use the stopwatch and stop her from moving and just constantly just keep destroying her.
I didn't keep the stopwatch when I got it. So that was my, that's a good.
And the stopwatch is good for like two or three particular areas in this game, and we're going to get into the other ones later down the road. But yeah, if you use the stopwatch during Medusa, she can't move, so you can just keep wailing on her. I think like three or four like stopwatch usage, and then she'll be completely done.
Gotcha.
Then we head over to level three. You're inside the castle, and then you have to go up onto pretty much the top like balcony of the castle, right? The catwalks. Which is, this is where things start to get a little bit more rough.
I'm sure that Becca would very much enjoy this level because it contains, something that her and I have a very great affection for, and that is hunchbacks. My boy Quasi and his friends are hopping around up here.
Man, like, if you don't hit them immediately, like when you see them, or wait for the particular jump, those things will just stay on you the entire time.
I mean, they've just been cooped up in that tower for so many years. They want to. They, you're the first person from the outside world to ever come into their tower.
It's like, hey, best friend, what you doing?
I've been talking to gargoyles for years.
Which has one of the most awesome themes to this level itself, too. But yeah, things get a little rough here. They start, you make your way through, and you. You get to the end, and you find two mummy men waiting for you there.
Imhotep and his friend, other Imhotep, I guess. Quasimodo was up here reading the Book of the Dead.
Yeah, when you get to this, how did you end up getting these guys down?
I think this was, I used holy water a lot. Like, I would immobilize one while I was whipping the other one.
Yep.
And it was just kind of a lot of back and forth. It was a little really aggravating because I would see one, I would see the holy water end on one of them, and I'd be like, no, you know.
No, holy water and whip combination is probably the best one to use for these guys here. It's they're not that hard, they're not that difficult. Every now and then they'll like throw a piece of like mummy wrap at you, just to kind of be like, hey, gotta dodge this. The nice thing about this room, though, there's actually a pot roast in this room.
I love the meat scattered all around. It's great.
Just, hey, break some wall open, take some meat out, eat it. No big deal.
That's why Dracula's so mad at you at the end. You know, like, he had his meal prep done for the whole week, and you just take it all.
It's like somebody in the Great Depression when they're storing money in their walls. So like, this is my food.
This is my roast beef, just in case.
Just in case, you know. Head over to the fifth level there. More of the same here. Things are a little difficult. I don't know.
The highlight of this is that the boss is Frankenstein and Igor. Like, yeah. That's so funny. And yeah. Igor is like a super hunchback. Like, he's jumping around the room like crazy.
Spitting fireballs at you.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. It's so funny. But it was also...
The thing is, like, Igor's not the actual boss. Like, you can hit Igor and stun him, but you need to take Frankenstein monster down.
For real. This is probably one of the boss fights that, like, almost made me, like, break the Wii U tablet. I was like, why?
What is wrong with me? Honestly, with this one, the boomerang, holy water, probably the only thing that would be, like, useful in it. Mm-hmm. But if you have it going in there, great job. But if not, I'm sorry. But leading up to this, though, you have one of the coolest enemies in the game, and it's the wall dragons. Or it's like the giant like snake head thing that comes out of the wall. Like I thought that was pretty cool. It's just getting to them. But when you're up there on the pretty much balcony, kind of walking across, man, it gets pretty difficult at times.
Yeah, the game's really throwing everything it's got at you. You're forced to rely on all your reflexes. It's very perilous.
Yeah, let's talk about the game throwing everything at you and talk about the next level, Tom.
Oh, you mean the Grim Reaper level? Like the literal, the literal death level?
Oh my god. This, I like, even, like I said, I've played through this game a lot. But, oh my god. Like, there's one particular part in this level, and it's the walk, it's the hallway leading to Death himself.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have the knights coming at you, you have the Medusa heads getting thrown at you, and then you go and hit the wrong item, and it doesn't work at all for you, and it just screws everything up. And it's just, you have to go through, and you have to play that so perfectly to be able to go to Death, which is not a simple boss fight at all compared to everything else that you've fought.
No,
because
no.
Not only is he floating all across the screen, he has his scythes getting thrown all across, and it starts off with 3, and then it goes up to 4, and then there's 5, and it's just, oh my god! This is the most challenging level, I think, in the entire game.
Like, you need a boomerang to get through most of this.
Yes.
And I don't know. Yeah. It's a lot.
It's,
and again, I'm watching,
it takes a toll on you at the end of it.
I'm watching the timer because it's so intense, but then the game's also like, hey, I want you to do this quicker, so hurry up. And I'm just like, why are you bullying me?
Yeah, when I got to the end fight with Death, I think I had 2 or 3. I know I had a multiple boomerang with me. So I was just throwing every boomerang that I had, but I was making sure to throw it at them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they would be coming back to me, I would like move out of the way so they would go to the other side of the screen by the time he got there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was mainly only worried about dodging all the scythes. I remember the one time I played this and I beat Death finally. And I was like, yes, like so excited. But the scythes don't go away.
Oh, so did you get whacked?
So I got hit after I killed him and it didn't count. And I had to go back and redo that entire hallway again.
I would have cried.
No items.
I would have cried.
Yeah. It was just like, that was one of those, like, I had to just set the controller down. I had to walk away. I was like, I'm not today. Not right now. I just can't do this.
You're out on the roof smoking a cigarette. Becca's like, Josh, what's wrong? Broke me, Becca.
But man, it's the hardest level in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now the final stage.
Yes.
Which, can I say before we jump into the final stage, the screen before the start of every level just gets you so pumped to go into that next level.
Where it's like, Simon's like just moving along.
And you see the map of the castle,
uh-huh.
like of everything you've done. It's like, yeah, I went on that big adventure. I did all of this stuff. Like, I'm loving this. Like, it's very similar to like Indiana Jones when he's traveling and just has the little line that goes from all the places that he's been to.
It's terrific. I legit love it.
But final stage of the game, they're throwing everything at you.
Mm-hmm.
Every enemy, every combination known to man. Most difficult part of this, I think, is when you're in the clock tower.
Yeah.
And the birds are just dropping hunchbacks all over the place, and they're not in any particular order. There's no method behind them, and they're just everywhere. Well, and then you have to walk up and down stairs.
Well, I mean, at this point, everyone knows they're going to get fired if they don't stop you. You know what I mean? It's like, I let you live in this house, and you've let him get this far. You kill him now.
Man.
It's bad for them. It's bad for them, but also bad for you.
This is like the most tiring part of the game. If you don't pay attention, you're going to get destroyed very fast. Mm. And there's not much health in this level at all either.
Nope. It's the final countdown. So, like, yeah.
You go through this whole onslaught of enemies and go through all these extra, like, stages and stuff like that are actually inside this level.
Mm-hmm.
And you come up to, like, one of the most iconic entrances, I would say, to a boss battle. You come out of the clock tower. And there's a set of stairs in front of you.
Uh-huh.
And you're walking up this really long set of stairs. And it's like, okay, I'm walking up. You said, I know what's at the end of this.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was one of those things, like, you didn't need to know that you were at the end of the game to know that you were there. You had a couple candles that you need to break. Now, the biggest thing with this is make sure you had enough hearts.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Like, so, like, if you got destroyed in that last stage or that last part, you might not have any hearts left, or you might not be able to do anything. So what I was doing is, like, I'd come up to it, mm-hmm. and I'd walk all the way up, hit the candlesticks and stuff like that, take the hearts, walk back down the stairs, go back up, like, to constantly keep transitioning so it would reset the thing so I can get more and more hearts to go up against the Dracula fight here at the end. Mm-hmm. So how was your time with Dracula, Tom?
Well, I got to say this. If I had not played Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, I don't think I would have known how to actually beat Dracula. And because I remember when I played Ultimate, I remember I'm just, like, kicking the crap out of him. I'm like, why are you taking any damage? And then the first strike to the head, it's like, oh. So I came into this a little bit more prepared just because I was, like, backwards logic, you know?
Yeah, but you got to watch. You got to jump over those three fireballs because, man...
It's insane.
If you don't hit it right, it's so weird. Like, there's such a strategy in order to do it, mm-hmm. like, to hit him in the head, take out two of the fireballs, and then be able to duck under the last one. Like,
yeah, I did not do this the first time. Surprise, surprise. it took a while, and it was it made the final victory that much more satisfying. But mm-hmm. I had to work for this.
After you knock his head clean straight off his shoulders, you are introduced to the second part of your Super Smash Brothers fight, mm-hmm. correct?
Big ol' beastie.
Which, man, if you don't have holy water at this point in time, you are not beating this level.
Rip.
Like, you need holy water to destroy Dracula's final form.
Yeah.
But yeah, you holy water and whip combination the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. Avoid his giant jumps, giant leaps. But, yeah.
And then once you finally slay the beast, you see Dracula's castle collapsing. And, you know, Simon can now buy that lot and turn it into whatever he needs to, you know.
Simon's lot.
Yeah,
Simon's. You know, the Stephen King book.
Yeah, Simon's lot. Roll credits.
Yes. Now, let's talk about them credits, Tom. What'd you notice? Oh no. Did you not pay attention?
No, I'm sorry.
Tom!
What did I do? I'm sorry.
Oh no. The credits themselves are very iconic as well.
Okay.
Because the staff's name at the end are all parodies of famous, like, monster movie actors and stuff.
Oh, I was just kind of like on my phone. I was like,
so it's like, I was like, it's like notes the story is by Bram Stoker. Which is Bram Stoker. And Dracula was played by Christopher B. Bela Lugosi, like, instead of Bella. Or Boris Karloff, like, instead of Boris Karloff. Like, all of these, like, monsters that we've seen. Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, the creature from the Black Lagoon, like, all of these characters and stuff like that were all referenced. I believe the audio was done by Mix Shrieks, which is Max Schreck. Like, mm-hmm. it's just really cool that there was, like, all these little things. But then the very end of the game, it says, and the hero Simon Belmont, played by you. Right? And it thanks you.
Mm.
So...
Well, let me just say this. Kids, always pay attention to credits and don't just, like, immediately put the controller down. I'm really bummed. Because I just legit, like, put the gamepad down. I was like, all right, good. Like, I was just like,
Oh, it was a sigh of relief, yes. Yeah, absolutely. So...
I'm going to have to look this up on YouTube. Just watch it.
My biggest theory on this game now...
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is a part of the Castlevania timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But is this like Mario 3, Tom? Is this a real game or is this a movie?
I don't know. They destroyed far more sets than they did in Super Mario 3, if you want to put it like that. That entire castle set, that probably cost a lot of money to put together and just gone at the end. Just gone. Yeah, tell me what the background of this is. I didn't consider it, but what do you got?
The reason I ask is because, one, it has a cast of who played each character. Now, we see that nowadays with, like, voice actors. Like, this person played this, and this person played this. But,
mm-hmm.
like, these are people actually playing the characters in the game.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So, one big thing I've noticed is if you look at the title screen on this game, the title screen looks like it's a film strip.
Mm.
So, is this a movie that we are playing?
huh. I mean, I love this. I love this theory. I don't usually love most theories. I love this theory.
Like, are we just playing a collection of the Universal Monster movies?
Was this just the Avengers of, yeah, like an Avengers-type scenario where they all got together and were like, let's put on a good show? I mean, considering all the characters are portrayed as actors in the credits, it lends a lot of, like, you know, a lot of validity to the idea.
It's just really weird. It's something that I've always thought, like, is this really a game or is it just a movie? Because, you know, it gets more difficult and more difficult. And you have your highs and your lows of the thing. It's something that always intrigued me. Because, like, I don't know. I feel like there's more to this game than meets the eye.
Well, it makes me love it even more. I'll say that.
So overall, Tom, I know you said earlier at the beginning of the podcast that you really liked it and you had some issues and whatnot. Would this be something that you would recommend people to play?
I would recommend it. I would play it again. I'm actually excited that I've played the first one because now I want to get into the rest of the series and see what else. I mean, I know I've got Super Castlevania on my SNES Classic, so I can go from there.
So do you know what Super Castlevania is?
Another Castlevania?
Super Castlevania is a remake of Castlevania from the NES.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm gonna jump into that next.
When the beginning opening, you're in the courtyard, you have the fire and stuff like that there. There's added stuff to it, different bosses here and there, but it's practically the same game.
So it's an HD remake in a way.
But it's weird because they consider it Castlevania 4. Does this pique your interest a little bit more at the rest of the series then? So for like 2 and 3 for the NES or?
Yeah, definitely. I want to play 2 and 3. I want to get into the PlayStation and Game Boy ones now because I've always heard them described as like incredible games. And now that I've seen like the origin of the series, I'm like, all right, well, this can only get better, then I got to try them out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know with the Netflix series that was released, it's based off of Castlevania 3.
I gotta watch that too.
Castlevania 3 is the second story in the timeline.
Okay.
This is the one that really deals with kind of Dracula coming out to his own. Like the first
Dracula
the
coming first... out. My dad. I love who I love.
Castlevania 3 Dracula's Curse is the like first story with Dracula in it. There's a story before that that where someone changes his name to Dracula at the end,
mm-hmm.
Which it's going to be in Lament of the Innocent.
Okay.
But Castlevania 3 is kind of where your Dracula story starts, which is where the Netflix series is picking up from. And then you have Curse of Darkness and then the two Game Boy games. But then with Castlevania for the NES, which we just finished, 7 years later, because after you defeated Dracula, I guess the item that you pick up from him at the end, you get cursed with, which is the big part of Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, where you have a curse inflicted upon you at the defeat of Dracula.
And curses suck.
So that's why, what a horrible night to have a curse.
I've loved Castlevania quotes. Now I can feel like I could appreciate them. Like, what a horrible night to have a curse. What is a man but a miserable little pile of secrets?
Anything else to add, Tom?
Blah.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.